Please join me in welcoming our speaker tonight, Anne.
Thanks. My name's Anne. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
everybody. And thanks, Curtis, for asking me to do this. And I'm always surprised that this scares me because I love the sound of my own voice, you know. And I really don't like doing this at all. Curtis asked me to do this a while ago, and you know, and a great story had happened about 2 weeks before I was supposed to do it, and then we had to cancel it and change it. And I thought, damn, I've got nothing. And that's really, my head went blank. You know, I'm thinking, what am I going to talk about? And the nice thing is you people tell me what I'm supposed to talk about. And the book tells me just what it was like, what happened, what it's like to now. And, you know, it's weird. There's nobody here. Because, of course, when I'm practicing, I always say, welcome to the new people and happy birthday. And, you know, that really threw me off. But anyway, so... I do love the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. And, you know, I was thinking, I met with a friend before, and Curtis is very thorough. He's told me before, you know, you're supposed to tell your story and you have to have a topic, and I'm like, okay, no problem. And for some reason I forgot that I'm supposed to talk on the topic for a few minutes. And I said to him, what should the topic be tonight? And he said, well, I was going to ask you what it is. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to have that down and know what I'm going to be speaking about. And, you know, and the thing is, it's going to be sponsorship. And the reason I might be a little emotional is because of sponsorship. You know, I lost my sponsor in January, and this was the first time I've had to. The last time I spoke was I left a message for him, and then that weekend he went into the hospital and died. And anyway, so forgive me, but I really... you know, it's really, I don't want to say they're tears of joy because they're not, but they're comfort. You know, I'm not crying because I'm in pain like I used to cry, you know. And I'm not crying because I had to get drunk and think of all the sad things in my life, because that's how I was able to cry before. Today I just cry because that's the emotion that's involved today. And I love what that man gave me. He wasn't my first sponsor, but I did have him for 8 years. Anyway, I'll back up and tell you what it was like. You know, early on, my head was on me. I remember being pretty conscious of not liking myself at the age of 5 and being uncomfortable in kindergarten. And, I mean, I would go to school, and I would think, those kids, they know something that I don't know, and they're comfortable. And I remember them, they'd be laughing on the blacktop, and I thought for sure they were laughing at me. And, you know, maybe they were. I always say, and of course they weren't. Maybe they were. I don't know. But, you know, it doesn't really matter. And, what happened for me, what worked for me, is I kind of became a bully, and you know, in kindergarten and pushing people around, and that worked for me for a long time, and that's how I was. I remember I was not a happy-go-lucky drunk. I was a girl who would get drunk and get mouthy. I always got in trouble, and you know, I remember I was 14 years old, I think, and my friends and I, we got drunk, and we were in a van, and the tire blew out. You know, we ran over train tracks or something. So the first thing we do, of course, is get rid of all the alcohol. Like, well, let's get rid of that. And then we thought, well, what do we do? None of us thought to call somebody or walk home. I mean, we just lived like the equivalent from here down the street. We thought it was a good idea to steal a tire off another van. So that's what we did. And the cops came, and, of course, I instantly am mouthy to them. And just, you know, my friends all get... did you want us to wait? I'm just kidding. I don't care. Anyway, see, that's it. That's my mouth that gets me in trouble. There it is. And so needless to say, I got put in a holding tank all by myself. And, you know, my friends are in their own holding tank and hanging out. And, you know, my friends had to come and, I offended him too, probably. But, that is the story of my life. You know, that's just how I was. And so anyway, at 5 years old, I needed a drink. And I actually found a drink at 5, and it was like cooking sherry or cream de menthe. I don't know. I did not find the relief that I was looking for, but I didn't even know I was looking for it. But what happened for me is that physical part of alcoholism was there from the get-go. I took a drink, and the next thing I remember is, you know, waking up in my cousin's bed with vomit next to me. And that's how I drank. That was the deal. And it was really attractive for boys I dated. Well, I was at a meeting last night, and this girl said, You know, I couldn't do anything. I mean, I could date a guy for maybe 2 hours, and I just thought that was hilarious. I just, you know, I might have had more boyfriends if I could do that. But anyway, so, you know, that is, that physical part was there from the get-go. And the next time I drank, I was with my brothers and sisters, and I was, you know, 13, 14 years old, and that perception change happened for me. They're all older than I am. My brother's 7 years older, and then the oldest one besides is 10 years older than I am. And so I'm hanging out with college kids, and I think I'm in the going into the seventh grade. And I thought my brother's roommate was cute, you know, and that's okay. He's my older brother's roommate. He's cute. Well, I have a couple beers, and I'm drinking a little bit, and I'm thinking, maybe I'll be his new girlfriend. You know, I'm 14, and he's 21, and that seemed doable to me. And, you know, and once again, I got so sick that they had to throw me into a bathtub, and I just, you know, was in convulsions, vomiting on myself. And you know, that was okay. It's the price I paid. You know, big deal. I don't care. And I didn't care. I didn't care that I got sick, because I could never remember that until I got sober. Every time, I mean, I had a boyfriend whom, when I first got sober, I thought he was an idiot. He was an idiot for staying with me for so long, because he was a pretty nice guy, always cleaning up my mess. I remember him, like, bringing Glad bags, like, go ahead and throw up in this. And he would take it to the curb, you know. And I couldn't remember that. I think, why am I sick this time? I was never sick last time. And I was sick quite a bit, but physically as well as emotionally and spiritually. But so anyway, I was 13, 14 years old, and that perception change happened for me. And I loved alcohol. I loved it. I love what it did for me. I love the way it made me feel. I was wound so tightly, you know. I mean, just everything. I was afraid of everything. I was just afraid of everything all the time. And but you didn't know that, because I was a tough chick and I was a mean chick. And that actually, I started drinking, and I went to go visit my cousin, and my mom got really sick when I was 14 years old, and she had a brain hemorrhage, and then she had a stroke, and she was in a coma for 3 months after that, and then in and out of hospital. Well, she was in the hospital for a year after that, and that was pretty devastating to our family. But I was so selfish and self-centered, I didn't care. All I thought was, boy, that really messes up my summer plans. And that was the truth. I was just pissed off about it. And so anyway, I eventually got to go on my summer vacation, and I left as a nice, sweet little girl with cute little, you know, Duranny haircut, and came back, and I'm pitch black hair, and I'm ratting it out to here, and I wear only black clothes, and that's it, you know. I remember my sister picked me up at the airport, and she called, you know, I call, I'm like, where are you? And they're like, she left. Betsy's already picking you up. I said, well, if she calls, she might not recognize me. My hair's black. And I just hang up the phone, you know. And that's how I did everything. I just did what I wanted, and then hopefully kind of skated by, or, you know, whatever. If my dad got mad, I didn't really care. So anyway, that is how I functioned. I looked pretty mean, and I acted pretty mean. And that, I heard a speaker say one time, if you were afraid of me, I didn't need to be afraid of you. And that's what it was for me. I didn't have to worry anymore about you, because I was always worried about what you were thinking about me, what you were saying about me. Are you going to like me? Are you not going to like me? And every action I took was based on that. And, you know, it was a pretty tormented head. So I like to drink, and I like to drink a lot. And, I got into some trouble because of drinking, because of the stupid mistakes I made, you know, just the things I did. I started dating this guy, and I dated him because he liked me, and that was it. He liked me. He liked me all throughout high school, and I thought that would be easy, you know. I didn't have to make an effort, and I was always afraid of boys, and, you know, and I partied a lot with him, and, you know, I mean, I started hanging out in cemeteries, and I didn't just, you know, I partied there, but I hung out in cemeteries and started talking to dead people, and, you know, I'd pray at plots, and I mean, that is how, and I thought that was okay. I thought it actually was kind of cool, you know, and it was really just insane. You know, and that, I mean, I remember I was sober for a while, and I thought, well, I didn't get in trouble, really. You know, I didn't get a DUI, I didn't go to jail, And then I remembered I did go to jail. I went to jail for grave robbing. That's where drinking took me, you know. But I couldn't see that when it was actually happening in my life. And I couldn't see that I was actually homeless for a period of time. When you don't have a phone and you don't have an address and everything you own is in a car that has a broken window, you're homeless. But that did not, you know, that wasn't the truth for me. I could never see the truth when I was drinking. It was too painful. I had a dad, I still do. He got sober 2 years before I was born. And so when I was starting my drinking career, he was starting to talk to me about it. And you know, he'd say things like, you probably don't want to drink, you're probably alcoholic. And I just thought, who cares? You know, of course I'm going to drink. And I did. But that seed was planted. That seed was planted, and I didn't know how grateful I would be for that. He's going to be celebrating 39 years on Saturday, and I get to go home and celebrate his birthday with him. And he's having a big bash for all June birthdays. And I remember he's had this for years. And my sisters and I would be upstairs drinking when all these sober people are out there celebrating, you know. And there's my poor dad just loving us and being kind and telling us the truth. And here we were, you know, hi, welcome. Yeah, my dad's sober. And like, you guys are losers. And the truth is, we were. All of us were. So anyway, I'm really excited about that. But that, you know, he was planting that seed. And so I got sober when I was 20. And I barely made it through high school. I made it through high school because I lied and manipulated people and made them feel sorry for me. That is how I lived my life. If you felt sorry for me, I'm doing okay. Because you'll give me something. And that's what I want. I want something for nothing all the time. And so I made it through high school. I'm dating this guy. We have this just sick relationship, breaking up all the time, getting back together. I think he's just an idiot. I hate him. He says, do you want to get married? And I say, sure. My dad's like, please don't. And we didn't. And that's strictly the grace of God, you know, because I would have. And for whatever reason, we broke up. And after that, my life got really, really small. I was hanging out with my niece when I got sober. She's 6 years old at the time, or 7 years old. I did a lot of damage to that little girl, and I had to make direct amends, and I continue to make living amends to her. She was my only friend, really, when I got sober. That's something to write on your resume. You're 20, and you hang out with a six-year-old. That's fun stuff. People really want what you have at that point. But I knew where to come when it got bad enough. And the thing is, it was... The life I was living, I was full of that self-centered fear where I couldn't do anything anymore, and drinking did not make it okay. Drinking always made it okay. You know, it calmed my head, it allowed me to do the things that I needed to do, and it just didn't anymore. And I don't know if that's because the seed was planted early or what, and I don't care. I don't even need to question it. But what I did was my dad had run into a girl that I went to high school with and gave me her number and said she's a member of AA. I called her, and I didn't get a hold of her, and we left messages for about a week. And what happened was I ran into her in a random place. And it was her friend had won tickets 30 minutes prior to go to this concert before it began. And I was with a group of people that were all drinking, and I was the only one sober. And I was so uncomfortable. I mean, I had been uncomfortable a lot, but this, I mean, my skin was just itching. And she was there, and she said she'd take me to a meeting the next day. And so I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as a member that day. And I didn't even really know what that meant, you know. I remember people were introducing themselves as, I'm an alcoholic addict. And I looked at my friend and I said, is that what I'm supposed to say? And she said, do you have a requirement to stop, you know, do you have a desire to not drink? I said, yeah. She said, then you're just an alcoholic. I said, okay. I mean, I had no idea. I didn't even know if I really had the desire to stop drinking. I know my life sucked. I'm sorry. I hope that's not crossing the line of that swearing, because I have been taught in AA not to, you know. I remember one time I did say, I swore in a meeting, and on the way home, my sponsor called me, who wasn't at the meeting, said, I heard you swore. And I was just like, oh. So I've had to watch it, but because, you know, my sponsor ran a tight ship. But anyway, So I went to that meeting, and I was extremely uncomfortable. And like I said, I did not know if I suffered from alcoholism. I know that drinking got me in trouble, and it wasn't working for me anymore, and then I was in a lot of pain. and that I might have a problem because I'd been told that for a long time. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, it talks about that we have to be as desperate as the dying are. And I wasn't when I first got here. I was, you know, you'd think you would be when, you know, you're homeless and you're vomiting on people's stuff, but I wasn't. And, you know, and I had no friends left and I didn't know how to be a part of my family, but I still thought, you know, I don't know. You guys talk about stuff that I'm not really hip on, you know, honesty and, you know, being of service and no. And, you know, and, but I stayed around and began to identify with how you guys thought and how you felt. And I do suffer from alcoholism, and I drank, you know, drinking alcohol was my solution without a doubt until it wasn't. And I truly believe that drinking saved my life. I loved it. I my dad said a long time ago that he has a sister who went cuckoo. I mean, she's been institutionalized 3 or 4 times. And he said, you know, if it weren't for alcohol, you probably would have been too. And I believe that for myself. And then it didn't work anymore. And AA saved my life. But it only works if I participate in it. And I do the things. You know, it talks about, you know, we always say these are suggestions. The book a few times says that we have to, you know, follow a few simple rules. There are requirements to this. And so I'm glad that that's what I've been taught, you know. Anyway, I suffered for a long time of not doing what you people talked about. And I was 6 months sober, and I got kicked out of my dad's house. And I had never gotten kicked out drinking. But 6 months of Ann's program, I got kicked out. I went to go live with my sister, and I started getting involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a home group, and I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps. And I got a service commitment at that home group. And that began to change my life. And I began to get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that saved my life. It didn't mean that my behavior changed right away. I was 3 years sober, and I was 3 years sober, and I lived a pretty unprincipled life. You know, I did some acts that were really painful to other people and ended up being painful to myself. And, you know, it's not fun cleaning up that stuff in sobriety, things that I've done in sobriety. It's much easier when I'm drinking and I'm out. Most of the damage that I've caused has been in sobriety. I didn't have any credit problems when I got sober because I had no credit. I mean, I was stealing money from my parents. I was stealing money from other people. I was a sponge. You know, it wasn't until I got sober and got a job and got a credit card and didn't pay it that I got, you know, that I had to make up financial amends. And I did, you know, make amends to my father, which I remember when I went to go make amends to him, and I was afraid. I mean, I did a lot of things to this guy, and I took a lot of money from him. My dad was in a cash business, and so he always had, you know, $300-$400 on him. And I always took, you know, 10% of it. And I didn't think he knew on a daily basis, you know. So I owed this guy some money. And I remember saying to him, okay, Dad, you know, I'd like to have dinner with you. And he said, that's great. I said, I need to make my amends. He said, no thanks. I said, excellent. You know, I'm like, woohoo. And he just said to me, he said, you know, there are some things that a father just doesn't want to know. And I did feel like I was let off the hook. I know, I was so happy. I remember I was speaking one time, and I said about the financial stuff and kind of looked over at him, and he wasn't aware of that yet. And because he didn't want to hear it. That was his own fault. I mean, come on, Bill. But, but I remember later I'd hear all these people talk about the relief that they got from some of the amends they made, and I thought, you know, that SOB, he stole my thunder. You know, once again, it's somebody else's fault. And when I did get sober, I hated that man. I did not like my father at all. People really liked him. I couldn't understand why. And, you know, if you wanted to know why I didn't like him, I'd tell you. And today, because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a great relationship with him. And I understand why people like him. He's a man of quality. And he always was. You know, he was always willing to tell me the truth, tempered with love. And he's still a great example today to me. I've had some incredible examples in my sobriety and in my life. You know, my sister is a member of AA, and she's one of the finest members I know. And I'm so fortunate that that's what I get to see. I know people in this room that, do this deal all the time, and I just get to watch it. It talks about that in the second tradition about, you know, the elder statesmen, and I watch those people, and I'm so grateful that there are some here. Because I have gone through the bleeding deacon, and I'm certainly not the elder statesman, but I just don't want to be a bleeding deacon, because I was. I mean, I'd be like, they're doing it wrong, and don't they want that I have, and you sit down, and I'll tell you about this, and, You know, I remember driving home with my sponsor and saying, I don't want to be a bleeding deacon. And he said, well, then shut up. Simply just shut up and do your job in AA. Oh, you know, I always think it's supposed to be this profound, oh, this is how you don't do it. And it's like, just show up and shut up. And that's probably been the hardest thing for me. I was also told by my sponsor, never pass up the opportunity, Anne, to keep your mouth shut. Thank you. So those are obviously things that I haven't quite learned. So I haven't mastered that all the way. But so 3 years sober, I did some really horrific things and hurt some people. And some of those things that I did, I cannot talk about that in the book also. You know, there are some amends that we cannot fully right, or some wrongs that we cannot fully right. And I have that in my life. I am willing to do it. I am absolutely willing. But I don't get to do it at the expense of somebody else. But the thing is, I can stay sober through that. You know, it doesn't define who I am. My sponsor used to talk about the fact that, you know, he's not proud of everything that he's done, but because of Alcoholics Anonymous, he's not ashamed of who he is today. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, because I was so ashamed and uncomfortable about myself all the time. And, you know, people taught me about integrity and principles to live by just showing me how to do it, not telling me or this is what you have to do, but by showing me and being that example. And, you know, I really do love AA. And, I mean, so many things have happened. I was at a meeting last night and a woman said, you know, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can get through life, death, marriage, and foreclosure. And I thought, yeah. And I've had to do some of those things. You know, I've gotten through, the biggest fear of mine is death, and two of the most important people in my life have died, and that's okay, you know. And, you know, I just show up anyway, and I just do the things that I'm supposed to do. And it doesn't mean that I feel great all the time, but I don't feel like blowing my head off all the time. You know, when I was out drinking and drinking, I drank because I had to change the way I felt. I had to change what I was thinking and how I felt. And what you people taught me is it doesn't matter if I don't feel great, and it doesn't matter if my thinking is so correct. Just show up and do it anyway. And it doesn't mean that the minute I do it, I'm like, wow, I feel so good now, you know, because that's what I was always looking for, to feel good. I want to feel good. And you know, it just means that I don't have to feel like crap. And even if I feel bad, that's okay too. I don't have to make decisions based on how I feel today. And that is how I lived my life. If I didn't feel like showing up, I didn't. It didn't matter if you were expecting me, depending on me, that stuff just did not enter my mind. I'm going to talk about the topic a little bit. It is sponsorship. And I've had some great sponsors. And, you know, when I was 8 years sober, I got my sponsor, Glenn. And I have been taught that, or told, and it is true for me because of my own experience, I have to have a sponsor that I could hear. And for me, that means that they have to have more time than I do, and they have to be more active in Alcoholics Anonymous than I am. And because I had a sponsor who had more time, but she wasn't as active. And don't get me wrong, she is a much better member than I am and was practicing these principles better than I ever could, but I couldn't see that because all I could focus on is the fact that she does not, you don't show up 6-7 times. You don't have 2 or 3 commitments, you know, at every meeting. Who are you? I don't, you know, you're comfortable in your own skin, but I don't want what you have, you know, bye-bye. And it wasn't until I got my sponsor, Glenn, and he would just, like, regurgitate exactly what Jeannie had already told me that I was like, oh, maybe, once again, I am the problem. Oh, yeah, that's right. But Glenn was an incredible example of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that he had emphysema for the last 10 years of his life, and he showed up anyway. And I know that there's a member in this group that shows up all the time, you know, and that just amazes me. You know, we just show up because that's what we're supposed to do. And when I started being sponsored by him, he sponsored quite a few people, and there was that instant sense of community with him, and I loved that. There was that solid fellowship, and he was an unbelievable member of AA. He was probably the most humble person I've ever met in my life. And, you know, and he loved this thing. And he would always talk about, you got to do the whole deal. And he loved his sponsor, you know, and I loved that about him. He was so proud of him. And you know, that man just taught me so many things. And the biggest thing he probably taught me is Okay, thanks. I figured if I were already following direction, I wouldn't have to be told, but that's okay. Some things don't change, but and that is a thing. I can follow direction today, you know, just like you did. You held it up. It's 5 minutes. And, you know, and that's what I learned that from. I mean, I have been taught by all of you people to follow direction, but Glenda solidified all of this stuff, you know, because he did it. And he carried this message all of the time. And that man never said no to a request. And he never didn't have time when I called him on the phone or if I needed to meet for coffee. He sponsored my husband also. And, you know, he would, you know, I always, and I'm like this, you know, they want what I have or they don't, and they need to come to me, you know, blah, blah. You know, who am I, some grand poobah? But, you know, and Glenn showed me a different way. I mean, Glenn, every Friday night, Glenn would pick up a burger and go over to David's house and go through the steps with them. You know, that's sponsorship for me. And, you know, it talks about in Dr. Bob's nightmare, just the last four things. And this is sponsorship to me. I'm not going to, the topic isn't Glenn. I'm really sorry. I mean, that's why it's like sponsorship. And then if you know Glenn, you could talk. And if not, then sorry, you know, that's not what I've meant to do. But, you know, it says, I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. A sense of duty. It is a pleasure. Because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. Because every time I do, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. And those are the reasons why I sponsor people and that I have a sponsor and that I show up to Alcoholics Anonymous on a regular basis and that I try to practice these principles in all my affairs. The 12 and 12 talks about, you know, AA is a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that if practiced as a way of living can expel the obsession to drink. And that's what it's done for me. And it can make me, you know, it has made me useful. And, you know, Glenn died on January 10th, about 1 o'clock. And on January 10th, about 2 o'clock, I had a new sponsor because that's what I've been taught. And, you know, and that was tough, getting a new sponsor. I mean, I was, because of how God works, I knew about 3 months prior that when Glenn dies, that's who I, because there's no other reason that I'd ever get another sponsor except for that. And I knew she had said something and I knew, oh, it was just a natural progression. That's who my new sponsor is. And so it was all God inspired, you know, and then I ask her and I tell David, you know, if this is how she sponsors, I'm getting a new one. I haven't asked her one thing yet, but I already know that she's not the one for me. You know, she does not do it right. She's not giving me any direction at this point yet. And so, I mean, it's just, you know, that's always my head. That's why I need a sponsor, you know. That's why I need one, because that'll sound like a good idea, and I'll go sponsor myself, and then I'll get drunk. And I don't want to get drunk. I don't want to live in my head that I used to live in, and I don't want to drink the way I used to drink and hurt the people I used to hurt in the way I did. I don't hurt people like I used to. You know, I am a member of my family today. Those amends that I had to make direct to, a lot of times I hear people go, oh, I'm making a living amends. They seem to forget about that direct amends, you know. I've made direct amends and then make my living amends. And, you know, and my sponsor today, it's interesting having a new sponsor. I'm excited about the work I have to do. And I like taking direction. So it's not a problem, you know. And I know for me that I can't be without a sponsor because my head is already loud enough and I needed a sponsor to tell me what's right and what's wrong. And I don't mean that. I mean, I really truly believe in the steps, and the 11th step talks about, you know, an intuitive thought or action starts to become a working part of my life. I don't have to call up my sponsor and say, you know, should I go to work today? Well, yes. You know, should I pick up the phone when it rings? Of course. You know, I mean, that there's just stuff that happens, but, you know, I'll end with this. I was talking to my dad a couple weeks ago, and he said, you know, the message that has always been for him from AA is just get over yourself. And that's what a sponsor keeps me in. You know, just get over yourself. So with that, thanks.
Thank you, Anne, very much for being of service and sharing your experience, strength, and hope. I'm Curtis. I'm an alcoholic. I, too, am very grateful for the people that came in before me and pass on what's been given to them. And, you know, I've had three sponsors in my 5 years of sobriety. My first year wasn't really a shining example of this program. I was still, you know, self-reliant, running on self-will, and driving on a suspended license. But, you know, my sick, twisted mind is that, you know, I have all the justification why I should, but that cost me my first sponsor. And then the next gentleman that helped me got me through my second year of sobriety. But I moved to Portland with 2 years of sobriety back in 2003. And, you know, I started my first meeting was the John's Landing meeting. And I remember calling a couple of people back in the Bay Area and my sponsor then. I was just, they do it so weird up here, you know. you know, but it's funny. I went back recently and it's like, wow, that's how they do AA where I got sober. Anyway, it's just funny the perceptions that we have. And I am very grateful for my sponsor. And, the process of going through these steps and going into new areas of my life and clearing up the past and becoming a better person, more of the person that God intends me to be, and to get out of that self-seeking and self the low self-esteem, the fears, all of that stuff. And, you know, the simple suggestions and the experience that's been shared with me feels like a struggle at first, but then once I'm able to do it, you know, whether it's calling other alcoholics or the load of doing a financial amends to a former employer, it's been an incredible experience. And then it took me about 3.5 years before I was at a point where I helped somebody. And then that's when I really tasted or I drank from the well of, you know, what this program really is. And that really changed me. And I could see what giving this thing away does. And I'm just happy to be on this spiritual path with all of you. Thank you.
Gary.
Gary, not at all.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm supposed to come up here.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll be the second speaker. Anyway, this is one of my favorite topics, and it's a really important one to me. Sponsorship, it's a label. Sponsorship is a label. I found it seems to mean different things to different people, and people do a lot of weird stuff with that. Some people want to sort of make a sponsor an authority figure, and I initially tried to do that, and what I do with authority figures is I avoid them. I tell them what I think they want to hear. I make them a part of my sick dynamic and whatever. And I've had that done to me by guys that I've worked with. You know, some people want a sponsor that's going to hold me accountable or kick my ass or somebody that's not going to tell me what to do or this or that. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about this and trying to understand what sponsorship means to me in my life. And I spent a lot of time trying to think about, you know, what is my sponsor to me? Is he like my brother? He's not really like my brother. He's not like a dad. He's not really like a friend. And what I finally came to was, well, he's my sponsor. You know, it's a unique relationship in my life, I guess is what I'm trying to say. There is no, it doesn't, that relationship to me doesn't equate to any other relationship. And in my particular case, it really is unique in that I have the sponsor today that I had from the very beginning. And he's the only person in my life at this point who's actively in my life who was there from the very beginning. He was at the mental ward of the hospital that I hit bottom in, and he's been with me ever since. And that fact alone is really important to me, to have somebody that I connect with who's seen me from the very beginning, seen me at my worst, at my lowest, and has seen the progression. And he, you know, the fact that he knows me as well as he does, that I don't have any secrets with the guy, that he's been able to see my progression through my whole sobriety, and the fact that he's objective, you know, because if I drink tonight, he's not going to jail. He knows that, and I know that. You know, so where I work and what I do and who I hang out with and where I live and the kind of trouble I get into, you know, has no effect on his life whatsoever. And I think that's one of the biggest strengths that any sponsor has is objectivity. And for myself as a sponsor, as soon as I start getting wrapped up in the guys that I work with, their problems, I begin to become less useful to them. And so I really, really stay out of that. And I have to often call on my sponsor to help me do that. Strange how that works. And, you know, people make a lot of weird, you know, a lot of some weird and some not so weird suggestions about how to get a sponsor. A lot of people suggest find somebody who's got what you want. Personally, I suggest that people find somebody that's got what they want. as a sober man in the program, for me, what's essential about a sponsor is that they're sober. Make no assumptions. And that they're sober, that they've taken the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that they're active in the program. And those things, I think beyond that, you know, it comes down to who can you hear? Because when you said that, I really relate to that a lot. What was really important about my sponsor, and I really do believe the man saved my life, and it was really important for me to have him particularly as a sponsor, not because he's so special, but because, you know, I could ask 10 different people a question and get virtually the same answer. But for some reason, when I got the answer from him, I could hear it. And all I needed was the courage or the willingness to ask him in particular for help, because he was the one in particular that I was hearing. And that was my end of the bargain. So I asked him and he agreed, and we've been doing it ever since. And that's been really important. So, you know, the other thing I guess I would say is that for me, in all the years I've spent thinking about what is a sponsor and what does a sponsor do and all that stuff, is for me, my sponsor has done two things for me. He's guided me and helped me take the 12 steps, guided me through and helped me take the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's taught me how to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I find those things to be equally important in terms of having a sponsor. Thank you very much.
I'm Barbara, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Barbara.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for making me cry during allergy season. it took me 2 years to get a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used my husband, and I don't recommend that because he's mean. And some of you are sponsored by him, so you know that was a big mistake. And he used to always say, "What step are you on?" And so I had to memorize the steps, and that was important. And but what I did is I did do the steps, and that person sitting there knows everything about me. And my whole thing is be real honest with somebody, and if they stick around, they're a keeper. That's how I choose friends. That's how I've chosen a partner, etc. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't seem to shock anyone, so, you know, you're all my friends. But right before I turned 2 years sober, I finally took that suggestion. And by the way, those first 2 years of my sobriety, I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable because... you know, I wasn't trusting a person outside of my intimate relationship, and I had no one to go to. I wasn't accountable to anyone. I wasn't growing. I wasn't taking suggestions from anyone. I would just come to the meetings, sit in the back, never share, and then get the heck out of there. And what happened is I died in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 years. And just because I wasn't drinking doesn't mean I wasn't full-blown alcoholic. And I don't think it gets any more painful. I mean, I thought it was painful being a practicing alcoholic, but you take away the alcohol and you don't take the action suggested in these rooms, and you'll know what pain is. Boy, I'll tell you. But I found out I'm an alcoholic for sure, and I asked this woman with big, giant bosoms. And that wasn't why, but it comes into play later. And my life exploded at 2 years sober, and it was just right after I asked her to sponsor me. And I had never allowed people to get close to me physically or emotionally. And my life blew up at 2 years sober, which it can do. You know, life is in session. It doesn't care if you're sober. And this woman at the Seventh Tradition, I darted out of the room, and I was going to leave Alcoholics Anonymous because it wasn't working. Of course, I wasn't working it, but it wasn't working. And she followed me to the bathroom, and she looked at me and she said, you know, what's wrong? And I told her the truth, and she enveloped me in her arms. I mean, she just embraced me, and for the first time in my life, I felt safe. And my dad couldn't give me that. My mom, my grandmother, my husband, my friends, and my dog kind of, you know, seriously had, you know, but this was a human being. I just told her my truth, and she still, you know, and from that point on, you know, I've trusted a sponsor. One person has to know my entire truth in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had 7 sponsors since then, and almost every one of them has decided that something better than Alcoholics Anonymous works, and they're not in the rooms anymore. And I say to my girls, this isn't a popularity contest. I'm not running for homecoming queen. If you don't like me anymore or it's not working out, this is your life. You better grab someone who's going to be there for you, who's working this deal. You know, and that's what I do. I have a sponsor, and she works the program stronger than I ever will. I mean, I don't even know how she does it. I respect her. I trust her. She knows me. And tonight I was supposed to call her at 6, and I forgot. So I'm in big trouble, and she's on another timeline, 3 hours, so I will call her tomorrow. But for those of you that are new or don't have a sponsor, strongly suggest you get into action and find someone that's going to help you walk this path, because I wouldn't go to Africa without a guide, and this is Africa, man. This is a wild place to be, sobriety. So.
I'm Sylvia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sylvia.
Thank you so much, Ann. I know for me, sponsorship has been a huge part of my sobriety. I've been taught that I need to have like what's talked about already tonight, I need to have a sponsor that is not emotionally attached to my my situations in my life. And, you know, the amazing thing is the first sponsor I had, I didn't get until I was a year and a half sober. And I was in the worst shape ever, even before I quit drinking. And, you know, I got desperate enough to ask. And, you know, the woman totally intimidated me, and I was scared of her. But you know what? I got honest with her, and she took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to work the steps. And by doing that, my life, my insides changed. And the amazing thing is, you know, I still have a relationship with that woman. I have a relationship with another sponsor that I had. And every time I've had to switch sponsors 3 times. And every time I switched sponsors, I did an inventory on it. And I gave it I gave it to somebody that I totally respected in the program. And so it wasn't just a decision for me. But anyway, today I have a sponsor that has always, and most of you know, that is my hero in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's always been my hero, and God just put it together, you know. And I've been told also is I need to have a sponsor that's louder in my head. And I need to hear. And I know that my honesty with you has everything to do with my ability to be honest with my sponsor. And that's, I don't know what I would do without that direction, without being able to pick up that phone and to get that direction that I need, because, see, I'm emotionally retarded. And so I need somebody that, you know, is doing more than I have ever. I don't think I could ever, ever, ever even come close to doing what those people have done. And it's amazing because, you know, I got to go down and I spent the weekend in at the beach, Newport, and I got to spend some time with her, my old sponsor. And then another sponsor is flying up and staying with me for 2 weeks. And then the next weekend, I get to spend a week with my sponsor. And I know I've been taught, too, that I want Duke want to say this, is not to have more than one sponsor. Because if it's left up to me, I'll tell that sponsor this something. And then I'd go and tell that sponsor this something. And I'd take the one that cosigned might be yes, right? That's what I do. So I tell my sponsor everything, and I don't bounce it off of everybody else. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank
My name's Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay. Hey.
Thank you very much. I mean, my experience with sponsorship really hasn't been a whole lot different than what's been talked about. I too have had a few sponsors since I've been here, and I've been sponsored very, very differently since I've been here. And you know, I was thinking when you were talking about how differently I've been sponsored by a couple of different guys, and the thing that you know, I was thinking about each one of them, and the one thing that they all did very, very well was they all made me feel included from day one. And I've always had a sponsor since I've been here, and that was not the case. I mean, I'm one of those people that came around Alcoholics Anonymous for a while before I got sober, and when I got that sponsor and got that sobriety date and started to become involved, which was something that I watched my sponsor do, that's when I started to stay sober, and that's when my life started to change. And you know, also that sponsor from the very beginning, that first year I was sober, that sponsor you know, brought me into his life as far as his family life and his work life and, you know, all that stuff that goes on outside of what happens here. And I would watch this guy around his wife, and I would watch this guy around his kids, and or his son at the time, you know, I would watch people do things and act in a way that I was unfamiliar with. You know, I'd watch people treat people in a way that I was unfamiliar with. And for me, I've always been a much, much bigger fan of what we do here rather than what we say here. You know, I mean, it's far more important for me to see what you do. And, you know, it refers to it. And then being on the flip side of that, you know, getting to be a sponsor. I was a year sober, and this kid, I call him a kid because he was only 16 years old, so he's a kid. And he had asked me to sponsor him. He asked me to sponsor him because I was the only one in the room under 30. And he was pretty clear about that from the very beginning. So, I was a year sober, and that was such a huge, huge deal for me. You know, I remember I said yes, and then I went to my sponsor, and I said, well, what am I supposed to do? And he said, just do the same things that I did with you. So I took him around. I introduced him to all the people that I was calling on a regular basis, and I introduced him to the people that I, would watch and hang out with and that sort of thing. And, you know, helped him get jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, our literature refers to, it doesn't refer to it as being a sponsor, but it refers to that one-on-one work with new alcoholics. It refers to it as the big payoff. And that's been my experience as well. You know, watching, you know, I got to go to, I've known the guy for about the last 5 years, and he's been sober for a little over three. Same story as mine, in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to go to his house. He graduated from college on Sunday, and I got to spend time with his family and his sister who flew into town. And, you know, you don't get to see that, at least for me, I don't get to see that anywhere else. You know, I don't get to be a part of that and experience that. It's unbelievable. So, you know, for me, being, you know, getting to be a sponsor is such a huge, huge deal for me, and it's such a huge, huge responsibility. So, thanks.
Thank you very much. You did a great job. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. I've had three sponsors in 25 years. The first one died just prior to my 9th AA birthday. And I was kind of sent to him. I didn't really pick him. And because I was pretty psychotic when I got here and I needed treatment, and this was the guy that was treating the ones that they didn't think were going to make, and that was really the case. And he took me on my very first thing. I said, will you help me? He said, sure. And he brought me over to some ashtrays, and we picked up two ashtrays each, and he showed me where they go. He says, that's what you're going to start doing at this meeting. And that was the very first direction that I took. And then after that, he told me that I had a terminal illness and that that alcoholics like me die from this, and if I'll do what he suggests that I do, I might have a chance of living. And he scared me really quick, and he intimidated me. And he basically, it's been said a few times, he guided me through the steps in a very, very piecemeal. He kind of broke the steps down into little tiny pieces for me. And he used to read to me.
because I was all over the map with reading. He went through a lot of things with me, and he became, he was my first higher power. I was very, very reliant on this guy, and because I was having such a tough time with God, and he got rid of that as quickly as he could, and but he did it almost like he knew what he was doing. And I look back, he died with 13 years of sobriety, and he had 4.5 when he started sponsoring me. The guy was amazing. One thing about him, though, that was interesting, because not everyone, I couldn't have worked with everyone, is he was extremely gentle. And I was, because of my past, I was afraid of men when I got here, terrified of them. And he was really little, and he talked really soft, and he was really gentle, but he was really, really smart. And I don't know if brains really helps a lot here, but where he was and where I was, I think it might have helped him work with me. He had a lot of patience with me. My current sponsor, I'm intimidated by as well, but for a different reason. He's 39 years sober. He does more, he's in that top five of people I know in the United States that do things for Alcoholics Anonymous. He's one of those guys. He is so frickin' busy. And I call him and tell him, I'm busy. I got to work today, And I'm cleaning up after the John's Landing group. And he's flying all over the place. But I'm intimidated by what he does and what he represents in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, he will go anywhere, do anything for anybody, starts sober houses, does all these things more than I could ever dream of doing in my own sobriety. And that is intimidating to me. And he's a man's man. And I think the great thing that I've been able to see over the years is I can have a man's man be a sponsor today. I couldn't have when I got here. I couldn't have handled that. And he is teaching me how to be a 52-year-old, sober, mature adult male. And it's one of the greatest gifts that I could imagine. And I just hope that I can continue to do that with the men that I work with. And he's teaching me how to treat other men and how to relate and how to be intimate at that level. So it's a great, great gift. Thank you.
We will now observe our seventh tradition, which states each group is fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. There's no birthdays today. I will now call the last two numbers on the tickets. If you've already shared, please pass, and you would share from 3 to 4 minutes. And the first number? 14.
My name is Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bob.
My first sponsor was probably the attorney who got me started in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the first time I ever spoke here, so I'm a little bit nervous. but Jim got me started a couple of years ago. And even though I've been in the business world for a long time and I was used to taking directions from other men, there was always an ulterior motive. And when this guy said, okay, fine, you're an alcoholic, you're going through a divorce, you've got issues, you're going to start addressing things right away. And he made me start writing down how come I was going to get this divorce and he got me started without even knowing it that I was getting started with it. And as the process continued, I got into treatment, and I lost my job a couple of years ago. I go to this boatyard, and lo and behold, there's two guys in there. One guy that I met in treatment that hired me when I was out of a job, and another guy with 23 years of sobriety who went through the U.S. Navy program. And that was tough, because here's this guy who's built like a fire plug. I ask him, one day I'm walking into the yard, and he says, well, Bob, how's it going today? He says, well, just fine. And he just stops dead in his tracks. Comes walking over to me and says, you know what? I hate it when a grown man lies to me. He's like, what? He says, fine. You're just fine. It's like, yeah, I'm fine. So he took me through the acronym of what FINE stands for and says, so what's part of those apply to your life today? And he dressed me down right there. He was tough. And he was the best person that I needed at that point of time of my life. And he said he had his strengths and weaknesses, and he says, "Well, you know, you seem to be a pretty spiritual type of guy." And he says, "Do you know anybody like that?" And he says, "Yeah, I sort of know somebody like that." So I met this guy out in Seaside, and he helped me in a lot of ways. And I worked with both of these men over a couple of years. One had to go away because it was getting close to his birthday, and he was going to have his annual near beer. It's like, "I'm sorry, you had a lot of things that I wanted up until this point in time, and that is something I can't have in my life today, so thank you very much." So that guy's off the list. And then the other guy who had more seniority, he got involved with some behaviors that I thought, and I said, "I don't want this either." So there, for a very brief period of time, I went back to my attorney, and that worked real well. As work progressed in the boatyard, some different things happened. And I wanted to have another sponsor, and I turned it over. And lo and behold, this other guy pops into my life. So things are going along pretty well. As I'm getting close to 2 years sober, I'm thinking, "Oh, Lord, it's really about time to have a nice relationship in my life." You know, all that type of stuff, turn that over. What I had in mind was not what I got. I got had a 57-year-old man and a 32-year-old man. I had some, like, you know, lady in my mind, but, you know, God knows what's better for me at this point in my life. So today I've got a young guy that I'm working with. He's 32 years old and just about 120 days sober. So the ability to be able to hold on to one sponsor's hand and be able to hold on to a sponsee's hand, now I finally feel that I'm... When I used to teach selling, you know, if you really want to learn how to do something, you've got to be able to give it away. And that's what I finally learned. I'm learning more about my own sobriety now as I get to teach somebody else about the things that I was taught about. So the gift of this program, I'm very glad to be here tonight, because otherwise, hell, I'd probably be dead. Thank you very much.
Number 83.
Pass.
72.
Pass.
95.
Do I give you this? Tanya, alcoholic.
Hey, Tanya.
Hi. Sponsorship. Well, I have just over a little over a year sober, and I still have my same sponsor, and... For me, it took me 4 months to even start looking for a sponsor because I was working my own program, you know, and people kept coming up to me and saying, "Oh, let me be your sponsor. We'll go to dinner. We'll go have coffee. We'll do this. We'll do that." And at that point in time, I wasn't looking for a friend. I needed someone that could really guide me through this new journey I was going on that I didn't even understand, and I was scared to death to even approach. And then I went with a couple friends to the old Saturday night meeting, and then I kept going back to that meeting, and I kept seeing the same woman doing all these things for the meeting, stacking chairs, mopping the floor, doing the coins. And I was like, "Wow, I need to be involved with someone who's not flying so low on the radar like I've done my entire life. I need to start getting out there. I need someone I can trust, but I needed to see what needed to be done in AA from my perspective at that point in time, and that was getting involved in service work and finding what I called my niche. In the meetings I was going to was really important because I wasn't coming out of hiding, and I could feel myself getting deeper and deeper into trouble by my isolation. And my sponsor has helped me tremendously just in understanding how to trust again in my life. And for me, at this point in my sobriety and recovery, is the most important thing I've learned, and I need to continue learning in order to continue this journey. So thank you.
Thanks. 85.
Deborah knows Deborah, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Deborah.
Thank you so much, Ann. Just a couple minutes. Everything that everybody said was just really right on and just related to everything. What comes to me is my first sponsor. I'm so grateful. I was so needy. I mean, my first 5 years, it was like, you know, are you my mother? Are you my mother? You know? And I would call her all the time. By the time I knew it was okay to call her, I called her all the time. And, I mean, sometimes I think to myself to this day, whatever happens if I get a sponsee like me? You know? The sponsor I have now, sometimes it just amazes me, I mean, how selfless and how caring and constant thought of others. That's the only thing when I finally do get to that place of thinking about you, you know, instead about me all the time. I mean, it's really been my saving grace. Thank God that there's that part about service. I mean, if we didn't have that in our triangle, I mean, I would be full of self. So it's definitely divinely inspired. And I remember the first thing that my first sponsor told me when I got here is that I was going to find a God of my understanding that was going to solve my problem. And she showed me where that was in the big book and how to do that. And, you know, that they were going to be a guide, you know, spiritual advisor that was going to be able to help me through that. I personally have had a lot of problems with that, what I think that it needs to be, like working with others and stuff. But when I think about that, I'm just somebody who's done the steps. And when you come to me, I'm to go to that or go to, you know, go to my happy place. No. Go to a place where it's like, you know, going to a spiritual solution. Because any problem that I've ever had, whether it's financial, relationships, or whatever, I know that only spiritual solution will get me out of that. And when I don't remember that, somebody, you know, can bring that to me and say, you know, there is another way instead of, you know, where you're at. So thank you. And it's really good to see everybody here. Thank you.
And I was just sitting over there, my heart's in my throat, because I'm thinking, oh yeah, I have to go over something to see after the meeting, but whew, that's a good thing. I don't know why I'm so nervous. Probably because I have to tell the truth. And that was explained to me early on, that I had to tell the truth. Also, one thing that I heard, too, is that I have to get what is ever in here out there. I have to get out into the universe in order for it to get sorted out. I think for me, I think I want my sponsor to have that one answer for me. And sometimes they don't have the answer, which is a good thing for me because I can say, well, that's not really the way that I feel, so that I am able to go back and pray about it so that I can get the answer from God, because that is where my answers ultimately do come from. And I'm just so grateful that I'm here, and that, you know, and that you and I really do have a lot in common, and I can sit in these rooms, and I can say, nope, 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 and that is just my head, and I am going to die in these rooms if I don't stop looking for the differences, because I am the type of an alcoholic that put anything into my body, anything. And I am one of those that when it goes over in step one, that I am here because I do not want to die. And so if I have to be honest in order to not die, I think I'll take the honesty part. So thank you very much.
This is the last two paragraphs from A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer.